All right, Revelation chapter 13. We are working our way through Revelation. I like to start off every week when we go through Revelation with Revelation chapter 1, verse 3. It says, "Blessed is he that readeth, and they that hear the words of this prophecy, and keep those things which are written herein, for the time is at hand." There is a specific blessing pronounced on anybody who reads this book and anybody who hears it. I'm glad about that. I got to tell you, you guys should be very mad at God because you got such a raw deal. I read this book. And I read the commentaries, and it seems like everybody else understands what this is talking about. Of course, none of them agree, but they all seem to know beyond a shadow of a doubt, oh, this is talking about this and about that. And I'm going through this and thinking, wow, I must really be in sin or something because I'm some of this stuff. Let me read down through this, all right? And I'll tell you what I think. Revelation chapter 13, verse 1 says this, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him power, and his seat in great authority. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon which gave power unto the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the world. If any man have an ear, let him hear. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had 2 horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. And he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast, which had a wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark on their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell, save that he had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is a number of a man, and his number is 666. For those of you in the Call to Serve class, I remember in going through that and talking in that first video we watched when they were talking about the early years of Calvary Chapel, and it said how Chuck Smith, when he first started, decided to start teaching through the Bible at Calvary Costa Mesa, and he averaged about 10 chapters a night and did the whole Bible in 2 years. 10 chapters a night sounds good to me tonight. If I could start Revelation tonight, I could do the whole 22. I could make the whole thing one night, and we just... No. There's a blessing to this, okay? There is a blessing, and this is the revelation of Jesus Christ. It's not the concealment, so I think there are some things to understand. Last week, we were in chapter 12, and John, who wrote this around 95 AD from the Isle of Patmos, said there appeared a great wonder in heaven, and he talked about, we met some characters, a woman, a man-child, a dragon, Michael. In chapter 13, we see it starts out, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea." Now he's on earth. And this beast, I believe we're going to see, is one who is named quite a few different things in the Bible. It is the Antichrist. 1 John chapter 2, the same guy who wrote Revelation in his epistle, verse 18, said, "Little children, it is the last time, and as you have heard, that Antichrist shall come. Even now there are many Antichrists, whereby we know it is the last time." And you hear that word Antichrist, and I don't know if you're like me, maybe I've watched too many bad movies, I think. Antichrist, you know. But Antichrist doesn't, anti, it means against, but it also can mean in place of. And the Antichrist, we're going to see, he's called a bunch of different things. He's called the little horn, the king of fierce countenance, the prince that shall come, the willful king. In John chapter 5, verse 43, Jesus said this. He says, "I am come in my Father's name, and you receive me not. If another shall come in his own name, him you will receive." And Jesus makes mention of this one who is going to come, not as a direct opposition to Jesus Christ, but a replacement, one to take the place of. Everybody is looking for the man or a man in this world. Of course, those of us who are believers are looking for Jesus Christ, but the rest of the world is looking for someone. We really, as a country, we come into that place every 4 years or so when we're looking to elect a new president. And we're already, I don't know, how far away are we, a year, year and a half, I don't know what it is, but already they're talking and we see these names. And is it Barack? Is it Hillary? Is it Fred Thompson? Is it Newt Gingrich? Is it John McCain? Is it Huckabee? Is it Ralph Nader? None of them are the man. You know, you look at any of them, and George Bush, Bill Clinton, I don't care, whoever, whatever side of the aisle you lean down, none of them are the one that we were ultimately looking for. Everybody's looking for somebody that just has it all together and has it all in control and can just fix stuff. You ever get frustrated? Any of you? I used to really be into politics and like to listen to talk radio and be all about that. It was an exercise in frustration because nobody ever fixes it. It never gets better. It only gets worse. And even the best guy, your guy, on the best day, still does some stuff that you just think, what were you thinking? What is wrong with you? When is that guy going to come? Now, when Jesus Christ came on the scene, Israel at the time was oppressed by Rome. Rome had conquered them. And they were looking for the man. They were looking for the one who would come and throw off the yoke of tyranny from Rome and would set up his kingdom and restore the glory back to Israel again. Because they thought that was their big problem, that there wasn't somebody on the earth who could just clean house and take names and set things right again. Jesus showed up on the scene to fix a different problem, because their biggest problem was not Rome. Their biggest problem was the fact that they were in slavery to sin and they needed to be delivered from their sins. And so when he showed up, they rejected him because he wasn't what they were looking for. They were looking for somebody to kick off the yoke of Rome. And he said, "You won't receive me. I'm coming in my Father's name, but you shall receive another when he comes in his own name." And this guy that's coming on the scene, Paul wrote about him in 2 Thessalonians. And he said, "Let no man deceive you by any means," because this church was worried that they had missed the return of Christ. "For that day shall not come, except there come a falling away first, that the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God." And the Bible speaks over and over about this one who will come, this man of sin, this Antichrist. He's always portrayed as something really scary in the movies. Personally, I don't think he's going to be like that. I think he's going to be someone that's very attractive and that everyone is drawn to naturally. And he's very charismatic, and he has all the right words, and he looks the right way, and he says the right things. And he's coming on the scene. Now, we look at this chapter, and you think, how in the world did you get that? I mean, look at the first couple verses as we step down through this. It says, "I stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority." It sounds like a really bad Godzilla movie, you know, where like Mothra or whatever comes out, and it's some fake puppet thing. It just looks weird, multi-animal beast. To understand what's going on, and I mentioned this a couple times as we've been going through this book, the book of Revelation has something like, in 400 verses or so, has like 800 allusions to the Old Testament, references or allusions to things that happen. And to really understand what's going on here, you have to be familiar with some parts in the book of Daniel. A lot of you are probably familiar, if you spent any time in Sunday school anyways, with Daniel chapter 2, where Daniel, remember, Israel is carted off to Babylon, they're in captivity. Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, four Hebrew young guys, got taken off into the court of Babylon to be trained up as wise men. And in the process of that, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, has this dream. And he wakes up the next day and he's freaked out. And he's got all of these wise men and soothsayers and magicians and everything else. And he says, I had this dream. It's just really freaking me out. You guys got to tell me what it means. And they said, well, okay, tell us what your dream was and we'll give you the meaning. He said, I can't remember. So tell me what I dreamed and then tell me what the meaning is. And they all go, well, no. I mean, if you tell us, we can tell you, of course, with certainty, absolute certainty. But we don't know what you dreamed. Nobody can know that. And he said, well, if you're a magician, you know anything, you should be able to tell me. If you can't, I'm going to kill you all. And they couldn't tell him, so he ordered that they all be put to death. And Daniel gets the news, and he says, tell the king, we'll tell him his dream. And then he got the boys together and said, we got to pray, because I have no idea, you know. And they prayed, and the Lord, in the night, revealed to Daniel what the king's dream was and what the interpretation was. And the dream was, he saw this statue. Remember, he goes to Nebuchadnezzar, and he said, you saw this statue, and it was a huge statue, and the head was gold, and then the chest and the arms were silver, and then the midsection was bronze, and then the legs were iron, and the feet were iron and clay, and the toes were a mixture of iron and clay. And then you saw this rock carved out with no hands, and it hit the thing at the feet, and it all knocked down, and then this big rock turned into a mountain, filled the whole earth. The king's like, yes, that's it, you're the man, what's it mean? And he says, well, God has shown you, he's shown you history, basically. He's shown you what is to come. Normally, throughout the Bible, it seems like God's focus is on Israel, and everything has to do with Israel, except for Daniel chapter 2 through Daniel chapter 7, 8, 9, somewhere in there, where God starts talking about Gentile history, and he says, Nebuchadnezzar, you're this first king, and your kingdom is the head of gold, Babylon. The next kingdom that's going to come along and take over is going to be less than you, and they're going to be silver, ends up being the Medo-Persian Empire. After that, there's going to be one of bronze. And it ends up being the Greek Empire that overthrows the Medo-Persian Empire. And then after that, there's going to be one of iron. That's Rome. And then after that, there's going to be this other one that comes up that's a conglomeration of sort of like Rome, but also some clay mixed in. And so he saw this dream of world history laid out, kingdom history. Well, there's another set of dreams that Daniel gets in Daniel chapter 7. And to really understand what's going on here, we're going to read Daniel chapter 7. So you might as well jump over there. I figure the more scripture I read and the less I talk, the safer we are. So let's just, because Daniel gets this dream and he gets an angel or someone actually telling him what it means. And it ties in with this, you'll see. Daniel chapter 7 says this. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and he told the sum of the matters. Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heavens strove upon the great sea, and four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse from one another. Sound similar? Beasts coming out of the sea. He says, the first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted high up from off the earth, and made to stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. We're going to see that represents Babylon, and in the man's heart, there's a section where Nebuchadnezzar gets saved, really. He gets a new heart put in him when the Lord humbles him. And then this next beast, verse 5, and behold another beast, a second, like to a bear, and it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in its mouth, it between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, arise, devour much flesh. And the Medo-Persian Empire came in, and it kicked out Babylon, lesser, but it was very hungry. It was a very devouring empire. Most people think the three ribs represent the three major conquests. They conquered Lydia, then Babylon, then Egypt. And that was most likely the Medo-Persian Empire. After this, I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given unto it. like a leopard. After the Medo-Persian Empire, Alexander the Great, leading the Greeks, came on the scene, and he was fast. I mean, they would go with a small army and just fly across a major distances and speedily take these groups out. He conquered the world by about 33 and was so upset because there were no worlds left to conquer, he drunk himself to death. He had four generals under him. Now, it said he had this beast had four heads. Underneath, when Alexander died, his four generals split up his kingdom. Cassander took over Greece and Macedonia. Lysimachus took over Thrace and Bithynia, which is around Turkey. Seleucus took over Syria, Babylonia, and Persia. And Ptolemy took over Egypt, Palestine, and Arabia. And so this leopard is a picture of the Greek Empire by these four generals. And then Daniel says in verse 7, after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. And the kingdom that came up after the Greek kingdom was the Roman Empire, and it was different than every other empire. You remember when Babylon took over Israel, they took the best and the brightest. Every kingdom they conquered, they would take the very best and the brightest, and they try to merge them together and use what they had learned. Rome was not that way. They just come in, put the hammer down, and crushed everything in their path. They wiped them out. That's why they were the part of iron. He said, and I considered the horns, and behold, there came up from among them another little horn, before whom there were three, the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. See, the thing about Rome, it was a couple of things. First of all the stuff that Daniel wrote was written about 600 BC, way before any of it happened. People who don't believe in the Bible have a real problem with the book of Daniel, because he laid out church history. Is it chapter 8 or 11? I think it's chapter 8, actually, where he lays out what the Greeks do so clearly that when Alexander the Great came along to conquer Jerusalem, the high priest went out and showed him a copy of Daniel chapter 8. And he was so floored because he recognized himself in the scriptures that he spared the city. I mean, and historians have a problem with it. Of course, the Dead Sea Scrolls kind of mess with them, because now we have copies that are definitely dated before the fact, where this stuff was laid out in advance by God. And Rome was this last kingdom. Rome was never conquered. It just sort of fell. They collapsed because of moral decay. And so we see this other horn coming back up, like there's going to be another world leader, a mouth speaking great things. And Daniel says, I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. Thousands, thousands ministered unto him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set. The books were opened. I beheld then, because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, I beheld even till the beast was slain, and his body destroyed, and given to the burning flame. As concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven, and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. And there was given him dominion and glory, and a kingdom, that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. And then he says this in verse 15, I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. These visions trouble me too. I don't know about you. I read some of this. I'm not one of those people who remembers my dreams. I don't even remember what I had for breakfast. My wife, can I tell you about the dream I had last night? And when she tells you about the dream she had last night, I mean, colors, smells, sounds, background characters. I mean, all these details, and I'm thinking, wow, your sleep is so different. Of course, when I go to sleep at night, it's like, good night, honey, you know, and I'm gone, and that's it. And then I wake up in the morning with a baby crying. For her, I guess it's a different thing. Well, Daniel has this dream, and it is so vivid, and it's so real that he writes it down, and he's just troubled by it. He doesn't understand. And he says in verse 16, I came near unto one of them that stood by and asked him the truth of all this. What is the deal? And so he told me and made me know the interpretation of the things. And here's the thing that's going to help us understand Revelation. These great beasts, which are four, are four kings or kingdoms which shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, ever, even forever and ever. then I would know the truth of the fourth beast. It seems like the first three were no big problem for him, but this fourth one really messed with him. He said, I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others, exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were of iron, and his nails of brass, which devoured, brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with his feet. And of the 10 horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, and before whom three fell, even of that horn which had eyes and a mouth and spoke very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows, I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them, until the Ancient of Days come, and the judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, in the time that the saints possessed the kingdom. And he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down, and break it in pieces. And the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall arise after them. And he shall be diverse from the first, and shall subdue 3 kings. And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High. And think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until a time and times and the dividing of time. He's got 3.5 years, 42 months, 1,260 days. It's a time frame that's said over and over. Well, last three verses. But the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it unto the end. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom. And all dominion shall serve and obey him. Hitherto is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cogitations much troubled me, and my countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart. So Daniel saw these beasts, and they were kingdoms. They were kings that were going to arise. And God giving Daniel visions of what was to come. Now, John, on the back end, is looking. It's funny because Nebuchadnezzar, remember, he sees these kingdoms, and what does he see from man's perspective? He sees this great statue, and it's a wonderful thing, an image of a man, and it's beautiful and glorious, gold, silver, bronze. God looks at it from heaven and says, I see a bunch of animals. I see one shredding another one and pieces hanging out of its mouth. From God's perspective, the political gyrations of this world are gross and they're beastly. Daniel saw these things laid out in order. John is looking back and he sees this one thing coming up out of the sea that's like a combination of all of them together. And it's again, it's a beast. And it is the coming of this one that the world is waiting for. So back in Revelation 13, when he sees this beast, which was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth was as the mouth of a lion. All of these things are characteristics of those other kingdoms, but it's all merged into one. And he says the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. We read in the last chapter, chapter 12, the dragon was Satan, that this one who's going to come, this Antichrist, is going to be empowered by Satan, whether he's going to be possessed at some point or whether he's just receiving his power from him. Remember in Luke chapter 4, verse 5, when Jesus was tempted, he goes out into the wilderness, and Satan, after he fasts for 40 days, Satan comes and he tempts him different ways. And one of the things, it says, the devil took him up on a high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world in the moment of time, and the devil said unto him, all this power will I give to thee, and the glory of them, for that is delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will give it. And he says, if you'll worship me, I'll give it to you. And Jesus says, beat it, you shall worship God only. Jesus didn't say, oh, nah, you can't give me those kingdoms, that's only God's. No, he says, that authority has been given to Satan. Jesus wouldn't take it. This one that's going to come is. It's funny when you look at this. Look at verse 3 back in Revelation 13. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. We saw chapter 12, we saw this dragon, which is Satan. And we read last week Satan's I will statements. I will be like the Most High. I will ascend into the congregation. I will do this. I will do that. Where he wants to be like God, and that's why he was cast down. He wants to be like God. He is the counterfeit God, Satan. He's the little g God of this world. The Antichrist that comes on the scene is going to be the counterfeit Messiah. In the same way that Jesus came and he died and was resurrected, here we see in verse 3, this counterfeit Messiah, this Antichrist, the one who's going to come in the place of Christ, appearingly be wounded in such a way that he dies and he's resurrected again. And all the people are going to say, oh, it's just like Jesus. We saw the Passion of the Christ. We know the story. He's the one. He's the one we're looking for. And everybody's going to go, oh, how wonderful, and flock to him. But when they're worshiping him, they're not really worshiping him, they're worshiping Satan, it says, and they worship the dragon, which gave power unto the beast, And they worshiped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast? Who's able to make war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies. And power was given unto him to continue 42 months. You know, I read through this, and look, we've been going through this. I tell you, the church, I believe personally, is going to be raptured out, is going to be taken out before all this happens. But God, in the same way that he gave Daniel visions of things to come, is giving us an idea of things to come. I don't believe the church is going to be on the earth for this. But even for those people who are left, there should be a comfort to them that he's got a time limit. It was given unto him to continue 42 months. Satan, in anything that he does, is done by permission. He's like a dog on a leash. I used to have one of my friends. I used to go to his house a lot when I was a kid. An next-door neighbor had a German Shepherd. Nasty dog. Just mean thing. And they had one of those long, like, steel cables with a plastic covering on it that was the dog run. And we had it pretty much timed. You could tell by where the trough was, you know, in the grass where he used to run. If you were out by just a little bit, you could antagonize that dog, and he'd be like, you know, and he would run. Yeah, he'd hit the end of that rope, and it was fun because you knew he was on a leash, and there's only so far he could go. When he wasn't on the leash, you stayed in the house. But when he was on the run, you messed with him. And Satan is on a leash. He's got a time limit. He's got a limited scope of what he can do. There's a specific amount of time. There's 42 months, 3.5 years, 1,260 days, when he has power to do these things. It says, And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And that's us. When this Antichrist comes on the scene, he starts speaking against God. He starts talking against his name, against his tabernacle. There will be a temple set up at that point he'll be speaking against. And he'll be speaking against those who've been taken away. You know, it's always fun. Nobody, I don't think, really knows exactly what's going to happen. But it's fun to watch the news and see stuff fall into place. You watch the kind of stuff that's been on TV for the last few years, the movies that come out, and you see, you know, all of the alien movies or all of the TV shows that deal with the paranormal, the supernatural, all the Area 51 stuff, all of the specials about UFOs grabbing people and taking cows and making crop circles and doing all that. And you just see, you know, Mulder, the truth is out there. You just see the world being groomed for the idea of people getting yarded out of here. It's funny, and well, as we get to the end of this, I got some news stories for you that'll... It's really amazing to see how all of this stuff lines up. How's that going to happen? I don't know. But I think that's going to be part of what brings this man to power, is he's going to have an answer, and he's going to be able to use whatever happened in such a way to cast aspersion upon God and draw people to himself. And it says, It was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and power was given to them over all kindreds, tongues, and nations. Now you read that and you have to think, well, what does that mean, war with the saints? If the church is out of here, who are the saints that are there? Well, there's a couple different things. We read Daniel and he mentioned the saints. In some places in the Old Testament, the saints just means the holy ones, the separate ones. In some places it speaks of Israel. It also speaks, there are people that we see who are going to get saved during this tribulation period. The church is gone, but yet, because Jesus said in Matthew chapter 16, verse 18, he said, I also said unto thee, this is when Peter made his profession, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus says, yes, Pete, I know that's not of you. Flesh and blood didn't reveal that to you. That's not you. You're not that smart. But that was my Father in heaven. And he says, your name will be Peter, Rocky, Little Rock. And upon this rock, Petra, that massive mountain, that profession that you made about me being the Christ, he says, I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Satan will not prevail against the church. The gates, Old Testament time, was where the leaders of the city would go to form strategies and make decisions. And he's saying the strategies of hell, of Satan, they're not going to prevail against the church. But here, we see these saints that are on the scene, they're being overcome. They're being put to death. Apparently, the tribulation saints, it's a little different story. They're not part of the church. And we covered that earlier on when we were looking at those who were worshiping in heaven, the elders on the thrones and whatnot, chapter 4. And he says, And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the world. All who dwell upon the earth. We've mentioned that as we've been going through. You keep getting the idea of these earth dwellers. There are those people who are living on the earth, but really it's more than just living here. It's they're caught up in the earth. That's where their dwelling is. You know, Philippians chapter 3, verse 19 tells us as believers, well, a contrast, those people, it says, those people whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, and whose glory is their shame, who mind earthly things. Their God is their belly. Literally, their appetites drive them. They're intoxicated with the things of this world, and they mind earthly things. But then he says, for our conversation, and that King James word, it means lifestyle, is in heaven, from whence also we look for the Savior, our Lord Jesus Christ. This is not our home. We're just passing through. I would hope, as you grow in the Lord, what's supposed to happen is you're supposed to feel less and less comfortable here. If you are all about this place, if you sit down and you look at the fall lineup on TV and you think, yeah, baby, I can't wait for that and that. That is so awesome. That's just what I'm looking for. And then you go look at the movie listings and you think, that is it. And then, you know, you step into the grocery store and you walk down the beer aisle and you say, yes, Crown Royal on sale. And, you know, if your appetites and your desires are all wrapped up in this world, you might want to do a check and say, where's my home? You know, we're supposed to be like Abraham, who was just a sojourner passing through looking for a city whose builder and maker was God. Our hope is in heaven. It's not this place. We're called out of this place because this place is all going to burn. And he said, all those that dwell upon the earth shall worship this beast, this Antichrist, and they're the ones whose name are not written in the book of the life of the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the world. And you have to understand, too, this book, not only is it written for us for end times, it's also written for the Christians when this persecution was going on in John's day. Around 95 AD, things were getting really bad. Nero was crazy. He was insane. Personally, I think it was after Paul had his witness before him and he rejected that, had Paul put to death. He went crazy and he would take Christians and he would hang them in his garden. He'd dip them in wax or in tar and he'd set them on fire and just run around the garden laughing as the Christians burned to death. They were like big candles in his garden. He's insane. And Caesar worship was really coming into power. And in the law of the land was once a year, everybody had to go into a pagan temple before a priest and say, Caesar is Lord. You had to say it. That was, you know, for most people, it was, no big deal. Yeah, Caesar's Lord, big deal. You know, go pay my dues. The Christians, Jesus is Lord. We're not doing it. And history tells us there were like 6 million Christians that were put to death because they refused to say that one thing. You know, you think about that for a minute and compare that to the church today. If somebody was standing outside with a machine gun and said, walk out the door and say, George Bush is Lord or we'll kill you on the spot. I know it's a stupid saying, but I mean, whoever was the ruler of the land, say that he's Lord or you're killed. How many Christians do you think in all the churches around would walk out the door and say, no, shoot me now? 6 million? I don't think so. I don't know. Are we at that place where we're willing to die not to deny our Lord? Well, at that point, these people were going through that. They were dealing with this crazy man who was putting believers to death. And this book was written to let people know, you know, there's two sides. There's those who dwell upon the earth and those whose name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life, for whom he was slain from the foundation of the world. This was God's plan. And then he gives this little saying. He says, and if any man have an ear, let him hear. Now, you should be familiar with that because we heard it 7 times in chapters 2 and 3. He would write to the church of Ephesus and he would, you know, these letters written by Jesus, and it would say, to him that has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith to the churches. 7 times. But here, he doesn't say that. He just says, if any man have an ear, let him hear. Perhaps because the churches aren't around for the Spirit to be talking to. They're up in heaven now. I don't know. That's my personal opinion. But he says, he that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. He's saying, you know what? You're being brought into captivity. Well, the one who's taking you, he's going to go into captivity. This one killing you with a sword, he's going to be killed with a sword. This is a temporary thing. For a persecuted church, be patient. You know, we win in the end. And that's part of what he's laying out here. And then we see another beast. He says, I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth. And he had 2 horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. Literally, he was satanically inspired. It says, and he exercises all the power of the first beast before him, and he causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he doeth great wonders, so that he makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and he deceives them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast, which by the wound by a sword and did live. Jesus said this in John chapter 15 before he left. John chapter 15 verse 26. He says, But when the Comforter has come, because he said, I would pray to the Father, and the Father would send a Comforter. When the Comforter has come, whom I will send unto you from the Father, even the Spirit of truth, which proceeds from the Father, he shall testify of me. Jesus said, when I go, I'm going to pray the Father. He'll send you another Comforter, the Holy Spirit. He's going to come. He's not going to talk about himself. He's always going to point to Jesus Christ, and he's going to speak of me. Well, if the dragon is a counterfeit father, and the beast is a counterfeit Messiah, then this other thing that rises up that talks with the mouth of the dragon is the counterfeit Holy Spirit. It's the anti-spirit. Just like there's an anti-father and an anti-Christ, there's an anti-spirit. This is the third part of the unholy trinity here. Coming up out of the earth, and he spake as the dragon. And he exercises all power of the first beast. The Holy Spirit comes to give you power to be witnesses for us. To them, this anti-spirit comes showing power to deceive people. You know, the first beast that comes up is this political thing. This guy who's going to come on the scene, he's going to be part of these conglomerate of nations. And, you know, if you read the news, and it's hard to keep track of all this, you see the European Union come on the scene, and everybody says, oh, it's the 10 kingdoms, and then only now there's 11. Yeah, but two of them could be put together, and it's 10 again. I don't know. Well, now Tony Blair just got done over there, and they were talking about some European superstate. And you see all of these rumblings going on where there's all of these merging of kingdoms. You read about what's going on with Iran and Russia. And if you read Ezekiel 38 and 39 and you read about the wars with Gog and what seems like Russia and Iran working together, it's like the news is all laying this out. And this second guy, he's a religious leader. This beast is a false prophet. He's called the false prophet in Revelation 16, 19, 20. He's going to have miracles. He's going to be able to do things to deceive people because people are looking for something supernatural. You notice that? There's been such a push over the last 20, 30 years to go with science. It's all about evolution. It's all about science has all the answers. And yet what we find out is as our technology increases and we look further and further out into the universe or we look deeper and deeper within ourselves and into creation, we don't see simpler and simpler things. We see more and more complex things. I remember when I was in elementary school, and do you remember the pictures in your science books where they would show your body and the cells were just these big blocks of round stuff, or the atoms are made up by these little things? And yet, as our technology gets better, we watched that movie, I can't even remember what the name of the movie was, we watched on, not the Privileged Planet, but the other one, I forget the name, but anyways, and they go into the cell and they show you it's not just a blob, it's a biochemical factory in there. There are all of these autonomous little tools. This DNA code, it's a computer program. If they took all of the DNA of your body and they just lumped it together, it would fit in like an ice cube size thing. But if they took it end to end and stretched it out, it would stretch from like here to the sun 300 times or some crazy thing. Every cell in your body has this complex code that uniquely defines you from everything else. And the intricacy of our body is unbelievable. There's some really good books. One's called Fearfully and Wonderfully Made. It's by, is it Yancey? Yancey. There's a couple of them like that where he's a medical doctor and he just goes through the different systems in the body and he talks about your blood cells. You ever think about your blood cells? You ever wonder why you cut yourself? Like my daughter this morning was running, the youngest one was running through the kitchen, and there's a place where we did some work on the floor and there was some linoleum sticking up, and she kicked that full run with a bare toe and it kind of popped open her big toe, you know, and if you pulled it back, the blood would come. You kind of squished it together. You ever notice that when you cut yourself, just all your blood doesn't run out on the ground? Oh, it doesn't. Because what happens? You know that your blood clots. That's why when you cut yourself, you put pressure on it. Because when there's a cut, your blood cells, something goes off, and it sends all your blood cells over to this place in the body where they start to coagulate. Nice word. And they start to form this web, this mesh, where they stop the leak. Do you ever wonder how they do that? Who tells them to do that? Why don't they just form a mesh in your arteries and kill you dead on the spot? I don't know. They don't, though. Because if they did too much, that's what would happen. You'd die. You'd solidify. But they don't. The white blood cells that go and find the infection and attack and kill themselves, and they know which ones to kill and they know which ones not to kill. Because if they just went on a rampage and killed the rest of your cells, then you'd have like leukemia or some of these other blood diseases. There's all of these things that your body is finely tuned to do that we just think, oh, it just happens. We don't know how it just happens. You think about your eye and everything that goes on in there to take light patterns and translate them into electrical signals and send them I can't remember how many times a second, hundreds of times a second, that they're scanning all the time. And people think, well, that just happened. Well, now scientists get in there and they realize that didn't just happen. Come on. We know better than that. We made computers. We can't do anything like what we are. We know that something else had to be involved. It can't be God, because if it was God, he might want something from me. It had to be the aliens. The aliens brought it in. See, that's what it is. It's outer space. Well, who made the aliens? Never mind that. They're greater than us. They're our friends, but they're greater than us. And it's crazy. People are looking for something supernatural to explain everything. And there's a guy coming on the scene who's going to be able to do supernatural things. And he's going to be able to do real things. It's 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 8. It says, "Then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and he shall destroy with the brightness of his coming, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all power and signs and lying wonders." You know, supernatural things are not necessarily of God. Satan does have some power. Remember back when Moses, you watch the Charlton Heston movie, Ten Commandments, he starts doing the miracles. The first one is he throws down the rod and it turns into a snake. And then all of Pharaoh's magicians could throw down their rods and turn them into snakes. He had the whole leprosy thing. He'd stick it in his shirt, he'd pull it out and it was leprous, he'd stick it in again and it came out clean. They could duplicate that. He turned the Nile into blood, water into blood. Pharaoh's magicians could duplicate that miracle, so Pharaoh didn't believe it. Call up the frogs. Pharaoh could duplicate. Of course, they couldn't put away the frogs. All he could do was make things worse. Great, I need more frogs. Thank you. But it wasn't until partway through when he started actually turning the dust into lice, when there was an act of creation, that the magicians couldn't do it anymore. But Satan has the ability to do signs and wonders. And the world is scheduled to be deceived by those things. Apparently, he's going to set up an image in verse 15. And it says, "He has power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed." I believe this is when he's going to set up some kind of an idol. It's going to be a statue of the Antichrist. And he's going to set it up in the Jewish temple and want it to be worshipped. And he's going to do something supernatural so this thing can talk. And it's not going to be like... it's going to be miraculous enough that it's going to lead people astray. And these are people who are used to seeing Hollywood movies, who are used to going to Disneyland and seeing It's a Small World and Pirates of the Caribbean. So they're not going to be fooled. This is going to be something miraculous, supernaturally miraculous. It's going to lead people astray. And then look what it says in verse 16. "And he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark on their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell, save that he had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name." You know when this book was written, right? Revelation? 95 A.D. A donkey was high tech in 95 A.D., okay? We think about it now, and it's like, yeah, I know that. I got my debit right here. Just boop. You know, we've seen the commercials. You guys have probably heard about Digital Angel. It's a company that's out there. They have a spinoff called Homegain Pet Monitoring Services, and for a fee they've got this little chip thing. It's not even a chip, it's just a little transponder that's in a glass capsule. It's about the size of a grain of rice, and they'll inject it in your pet between its shoulder blades, so that if Fluffy or Spot ever runs away and it gets taken to the Humane Society or someplace like that, the Humane Society can have a little scanner and they'll just run it over there and it'll go boom and it'll give off a number, an ID number, and they'll know that that's your Fluffy or your Spot, and they can call you because they use this database and they can find your pet. You guys have all seen the commercials for OnStar. You've heard it. "Oh, thank you, OnStar. You've unlocked my car from anywhere." You know, I used to live in the city. LoJack was really big in the city. Any of you guys ever heard of LoJack before when I lived down in Philadelphia? Because people are always ripping off cars. And so you go to LoJack and they take your car, and somewhere in your car, they don't tell you where, they hide a transponder. And if your car ever gets ripped off, you call up LoJack, and they will send a signal to it, and it'll tell them exactly where your car is, and so the cops can go find your car before it gets chopped up and stripped. There's a company that has something called the GenTrack Personal GPS Locator and Tracking System. It's about the size of a cell phone. It's something that you can give to your kids. They have one that's in the form of a teddy bear. There's also one like a cell phone. And what happens is, if your kids ever get lost or get taken, they send a signal, and it'll tell exactly where your children are. It'll say, this is where they are. In fact, it'll turn on a little microphone right in the unit so that they can hear what's going on. There's a button the kids can press on there if they're ever taken. See, because you read this and you think, well, I'm never going to get the mark. I would never. Of course, you're not going to be here if you're a believer. If you are, you know, get right before you leave. But if you're not a believer, but if you're a Christian, I don't think you're going to be here. But this is an easy sell to the world. It's such an easy sell, because all you have to say is, your kids will be safe. You'll never lose your child. We have GPS, global positioning system, so we can find something in the span of, you know, a few inches anywhere on the planet. Our buddy Al tried to very ingeniously combine that into his whole proposal thing. Didn't work out so well, but he did do it. He actually went out and hit something and was going to GPS with a ring in it. Ask him about it. He'll tell you about the story. But anyways, you can find anything on the planet using GPS. There was an article I saw. It was in Tech News World. This is from a couple days ago. It says, swiping your credit card is so yesterday. Customers who drive up to any of the more than 1,000 Arby's restaurants can literally wave themselves through the payment window. The fast food chain is one of the first to have rolled out support for contactless payment cards nationwide, both inside and at the drive-thru. We build it. We'll see if they come. And the way it works is they put a little wireless chip inside your card, and they just have a little sensor, and you just kind of swipe it out. You don't even have to swipe through anything. You just get near it, and it'll boom, and anything under $25, you don't have to sign for, and it just takes it out of your account. You know, I mean, what's the big topic of the news today? What is it everybody's clamoring about? Part of it is illegal aliens. How do we deal with illegal immigration? Well, it's real easy. All you have to do is go to a wireless money system so that everybody has to be in the system in order to buy or sell anything. And that dries up. There's no black market anymore. They can't come over here and work under the table for nothing, because you can't buy anything unless you have a number. Real easy. The military already, they have the mark cards that they have that has the same type of ID in there, and it carries not only individual information, it keeps medical records and all that stuff, so anywhere a soldier is, they can do it. They have technology where they can put into the soldiers, where they can actually monitor them where they are on the battlefield. They can get vital signs off of them. They can tell what your pulse is. They're working on wireless glucose monitoring things they can put inside of you. They have prison tracking modules for people who come out of prison. Paris Hilton will probably be wearing one for a while. That's going to tell where she is at all times in case she goes clubbing, you know, when she's out of prison. I mean, all of this stuff is here. John's writing this 1,900 years ago, and everybody's saying, that's insane. How could that ever work? How are we going to have one currency the whole worldwide? I mean, they were trading sheep and chickens back then, and now they're going to be one global money system. Well, now we look at it and say, well, that's nothing. Everybody's got an ATM card. Everybody's got a Visa card. Does that mean that's going to be the mark of the beast? I doubt it. You know, it says it's going to be a mark on your hand or on your forehead. Certainly, because if you have a digital ID of some kind, you don't want it to be stolen. The best way to do it is to implant it. You can do a tattoo. I mean, they have, if any of you guys who travel on the interstates, they have the Easy Pass or whatever it is, and they either put a barcode on your car, or they put a transponder in it, and you can drive by at 50 miles an hour. Boom! They know what. The problem is with that, if you go boom, boom between two points too fast, they know your speed limit, and they can boom send you a ticket from the mail without ever pulling you over. There is some issues with that, but. You know, if something happens, and just picture, okay, let's say that there is a rapture of the church, boom, Christians are gone everywhere. Let's say God takes all the little kids too. Let's really cause a panic. Let's take all the kids too young to know. Boom, gone. Well, people are going to continue to have children, and someone comes on the scene and says, we'll never let your children be taken again. All you have to do is put this mark on you, and we'll be able to track everybody everywhere on the planet. Not only that, we won't have to worry about money systems. We can all be on the same currency. Forget the euro. We'll do the injecto, or whatever we call it, that we put on you. And, oh, yeah, we want that. I never want to lose my kids. I mean, it's real easy to see how that happens. So we're going to see this guy setting up this world money system. And then this last verse, verse 18, here is the wisdom. Let him that has understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. 666. What does that mean? Everybody under the sun for the last 1,900 years has had a theory about what it means. What they usually do, Hebrew's a cool language, because not only do the letters themselves have meanings, they also have numeric representation. You know, you guys can understand the idea of doing a code where like an A is a 1 and a B is a 2. If you're a computer programmer like I am or Al, you understand what ASCII code is. Every letter has a number associated with it. And so if you take those letters and you add up people's names, like an A and a 1 and B is 2 or whatever, you can spell out people's names, and you find out that, you know, in some languages in Latin, Constantine's name adds up to 666. He must be the Antichrist. I don't know. I've heard everything under the sun. Have you seen this guy down in Florida? the pastor with a 666 tattoo who claims to be divine, Jose Luis de Jesus Miranda. He says, he is not your typical minister. De Jesus, or Daddy, as his thousands of followers call him, does not merely pray to God. He says he is God. The spirit that's in me is the same spirit that was in Jesus of Nazareth, De Jesus says. De Jesus, or De Jesus, claims of divinity have angered Christian leaders who say he is a fake. And then we see that he's got hundreds of followers who have tattooed 666 on their arms. He used to be a heroin addict and spent some time in prison until he was visited by Jesus to tell him, you're really God. I mean, it's stupid. But is he the Antichrist? No, I don't think so. Is he a flake? Yeah. I mean, the fact that Jesus 2,000 years ago said there are going to be many people rising up in my name claiming to be me, that's a pretty bold thing to say, really, when you think about it. I mean, I'm not, for me to say, yeah, a couple thousand years from now, everybody's going to say, I'm Steve Brown. No, they're not. They're not going to know who I am. But yet Jesus said that from a little town, obscure town of Nazareth, and people are still doing it, claiming to be him. The truth is, I don't think anybody knows who this guy is. The truth is, I don't think we have to worry, because I think we're going to be watching it from the mezzanine and know very specifically who everything is, because we'll be seeing it perfectly from heaven. But the question you have to ask yourself is, who are you looking for? Because there are so many people who go through life figuring, and I like talking to my buddy Aaron Dudley. I was talking to him this weekend, and he grew up, and his mother was really into bizarre spiritual things, and she was definitely a post-tribulation rapture person. The church is going to be here to the very end and fight their way through all of this, and we'll survive with shotguns and beans and all that. And he figured, well, if that's the case, as soon as I see this Antichrist come on the scene, I'll know it's time to get right. I mean, that's what I'm waiting for. As soon as he comes on the scene, I'll know I got 7 years, I better do something about it, so I can live like however I want now. Well, that's not the picture we see in the scriptures. We're told time and time again to be ready, to be watching. Paul says this, and we'll end with this, in Titus chapter 2, verse 11. It says, for the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world, looking for that blessed hope and the glorious appearing of the great God and our Savior Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself a peculiar people, zealous of good works. These things speak and exhort and rebuke with all authority. Let no man despise thee. He said, you know, we should be looking for the return of Jesus Christ. We should expect him to come at any minute. We should be living our lives like we really believe he's coming back. We shouldn't be looking for the Antichrist. You shouldn't be trying to figure out whether your Visa card is the mark of the beast or whether, you know, somebody talking to you has got 666 tattooed in their forehead. I mean, really, you can get so weirded out and spooked out and caught up in this stuff. That's not profitable. Get caught up in Jesus Christ. Make him the focus of your life and be looking for him any moment. And he'll take care of all the details on this. If you don't know him and you want to know him, come see me. I'd be glad to pray with you. And if you're feeling like a little bit like the church was back then, dipped in wax and about ready to be lit on fire, come see me. I'd be glad to pray with you, because this life, sometimes we can get smoked. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much, Father, that we're not appointed unto wrath, but unto salvation. Father, that you've made promises that you're going to prepare a place for us. And if you go to prepare a place, that you'll return and pick us up, and that where you are, we may be also. Lord, I pray that you would come quickly, and that until you come, you would find us faithful, Lord, to be looking for your return and to be men and women of your word, not living slaves to our appetites, caught up in the things of this world. But Father, make us men and women after your heart. Help us to look at this world and take stock of what's important and what's not. And Lord, help us always to be ready to have an answer for the hope that we have. I pray, Lord, you'd bless these people, you'd keep them this week. We ask it in Jesus' name.